some time ago, I was asked by one of my Talmidim, who's going on a skiing holiday in the French Alps, what is the status of French bread? The reason being, this village was hundreds of miles away from the nearest Jewish baker, and he wanted to know what is the status of French bread. Can he eat it or not? Now, the answer depends on two points. Historically, it's like this. When the Yidden were in Golus Babel, the greatest threat to the continuation of Klal Yisrael was not Babylonian, it was intermarriage. And in order to cut down on the rate of intermarriage, Daniel, the man from the lion's den, and his chaverim, on the base then, decided to protect our identity against intermarriage by making gezeiros against socializing with the locals. And one socializes through drinking wine, eating bread, eating meals with them. So they made the issa on Yein Nochi and Bishul Nochi and Pas Nochi. The least stringent was the issa on bread. Simple reason, we can't manage without, and not everybody in those days could bake bread at home. I went to the Masada exhibition in the early 60s, and I saw for the first time, and last time in my life, a kira of 2,000 years ago. I assure you, Rabbi Isai, it was quite impossible to do any baking in a clay kira, which is no more than 6 inches high. So the Chachomim had to make allowances, and they said that the bread of a balabayis, nochi is osa, but paltzer, a professional baker, there's not much chance of intermarriage. The fellow sells things. You can buy a pair of shoes from a nochi, you're not going to get involved in his family if you buy a pair of shoes. Neither if he's a baker selling to hundreds of people, if you, here's your money, give me the bread. So they were makel with a pas paltzer. If there's no Jewish baker in the vicinity, or there is, but his bread is not the same quality. However, they said the following. In those days, bread was baked on the oven floor using wood as fuel. If a yid takes a stick, just one piece of wood, and throws it into the fire, the bread is now past the soil. And this continues until the fire has gone out for 24 consecutive hours. And as this very rarely happens, people want bread every day. So by throwing in one piece of wood, you've turned into patsy soil for the foreseeable future. So I told my Talmud, obviously there's no fuel called wood these days, it's either gas or electricity. So I said, if the baker allows you to turn off the gas for a split second and you turn it on with electricity, you've got patsy soil. However, things have changed since the days of Daniel. In those days, bread was a mixture of flour, water, and salt, if you were lucky. Now, of course, things have changed. There are all sorts of different additives to bread, and therefore it is impossible today to be able to give a definitive answer whether bread is kosher or not. Just can't be done. There used to be an accepted sack, the wrong word perhaps, but it was used to be accepted that of all the French bread, the baguette is free of any additives. And if that is still true, I said you have to find out, things change, but if that is true, then you can buy them as long as you ascertain they're baked on the oven floor, because they've progressed and they use baking tins, and they smear their tins with grease, and of course the grease is not kosher, so we can't have it. And the way to tell, I've been told, is you look at the bottom of the baguette. If it's as dull colored as the rest of the baguette, you know it's been baked on the oven floor and is kosher. If it's shiny, that shows there's been an application of grease and it's not kosher. Now, this flat which these young men hired was part of a block. And the baker from which they bought their baguettes had his bakery in that block. And the whole area was surrounded by a wall of at least 10 tefachim. So now the question was, in general, forget the baguettes, in general, were they allowed to carry outside their flat without having made an eruv? So the answer is, in the public areas, you can. The only issa is if you want to carry from the private to the public or the public to the private. For that you need an eruv. But if you just want to carry in the public areas without moving anything into the private, it's mutter. However, I told them you have to find out whether there are any other Jewish tenants in the block. If there aren't, you don't have to make eruv chatzeres at all. And then you can carry from public to private and private to public without any problems. You only have to make a eruv chatzeres in a block of flats if you have two Jewish families. Now, what we do these days is on Friday we buy challis, bread for Shabbos, and we have lecha mishnah, and that's it. He asked me, what happens if he wants fresh baguette for Shabbos morning for lunch? Is he allowed to give money to the baker ahead of Shabbos and collect the baguettes on Shabbos? As I said, there were no Jewish tenants there, so he could carry. So I said, no, under no circumstances. That is 100% forbidden. Next question. What happens if this very kind baker presents me with a baguette or two on Shabbos morning? Carrying, as we said, is no problem. Can he accept them or not? So the Mechaber in Shulchan Aruch and Shin Kafei first of all says definitely not. Why not? Number one, there's the issue of muktzah. When did the baker bake these baguettes? During the night. When Shabbos began, they were flour. Flour is muktzah. We are not allowed to move any flour. It's inedible. It has no use. It's muktzah. So we have a klal. Anything which was muktzah bein hashmoshes remains muktzah for the whole of Shabbos. So therefore, these baguettes are muktzah. You can't even accept them. Another reason, says the Mishnah Berurah, the problem of noilad. It's completely changed. When Shabbos began, it was flour and water and salt. Now it's a baguette. So the issue of noilad. So the Mechaber says, however, if you have nothing to eat for Sudas Shabbos or other Sudas Mitzvah, then you can be naked. What's the reason of the kula? We just said that anything which was muktzah ben hashmoshes remained muktzah the whole Shabbos. But that is, according to this opinion, only if there's nothing you can do about it. Now, a yid, for example, if I own a bag of flour, when Shabbos begins, it's muktzah. What can I do with that flour during Shabbos? Nothing. So it's muktzah, even should my au pair girl decide she's going to bake me a nice cake. But a nochri, his flour, he can do what he likes with it. So since he can turn his flour into bread, if he does it, we don't say it's muktzah. But that, says the Mechaber, is only mamish b'shas hadchak, if you've got nothing else to eat. But otherwise, the bread is muktzah. In our Beis HaMedrash, from time to time, especially Shabbos Mevorchim, I've got some people forward to this week, we have, after davening, a kiddush. And we have a dedicated committee which prepare the kiddush. And they do it before davening, otherwise we do it after, we'd have to wait, and people doing davening, they've missed davening. So they do it, they come early, and they prepare everything. And there's nothing, absolutely nothing against this. But I was asked, what about the olives? Now olives come in a jar, and they're pickled in brine. So what we do is we take off the screw cap and hold it against the jar, tilt it, all the brine goes down the drain, and the olives are now ready to be put into little dishes for the kiddush after davening. Is this allowed or not? And when I was asked, I knew one thing for certain, and that is, it's not in the Shulchan Aruch. So one has to start looking. Now my first port of call was Rav Moshe Feinstein. There are similar cases. There's one in the Gemara in Shabbos, which is found in Shulchan Aruch, and that is this. You have a barrel of wine. It has not been filtered. So at the bottom you have the shmorim, the lees. Now, I don't want lees in my wine, I want clean wine. So what do? So I pick up the barrel and tilt it, out comes the clean wine. But when it comes to the shmorim, you have to stop, because you're not allowed to sift or strain the wine from the shmorim. That is, if you're not going to have it immediately. If you're going to have it immediately, you can. But that's what the Gemara says. So when you come towards the bottom, you have to stop. Now, before all our milk was homogenized, those of us who are old enough will remember, milk came in bottles, and the top inch or two was cream. Now, some people don't like cream. Other people, that they want cream. Now, unless you're going to have the milk and the cream, if you want to separate one from the other, are you allowed to do that on Shabbos? So the Mishnah Berurah says there are two options. To separate it where the two meet is forbidden. But if you leave a little bit of the cream with the milk, or you take a little bit of the milk with the cream, it's mutter. So Rav Moshe Feinstein uses this Gemara, this halacha, as a basis for our pickled olives. He says, let us say the jar is 12 inches high. What you do is you pour the water out of the first 11 inches, which is allowed, as long as you've got some tarubas, some mixture of olives and water at the bottom, you're all right, based on this Gemara. Now, in my very humble opinion, I must say, I cannot understand this sickle of Moshe. There's no comparison. In the case of the wine in the Gemara, it's all separate. The taruvas is only at the bottom. So when you pour away the wine from the top, you're not doing any boirer of any sort. It's just plain, clear wine. The question of boirer starts only at the bottom. But with a jar of pickled olives, you've got the taruvas all the way to the top. And were I to pour out 1 inch of water, I have now separated the olives from the water. Now there's another example. Your wife might serve you with a few slices of meat on Shabbos. And you find that there is some fat in this meat. So on a weekday, what would you do? You don't like fat. So you take a knife and cut away where the fat and the meat meet, and you discard it, and that's it. But on Shabbos is the issur of boira. So now you have, again, two options. One is cut some of the meat and leave it with the fat, or leave some of the fat with the meat. These are the two options. And it seems that Rav Moshe thought that this is the same here. But of course it isn't. If you think about it carefully, you'll see there's no comparison whatsoever. In the case of the milk, if you take most of the cream and leave a bit behind, you still have the tarubas as it was before, except that there's not so much. But the tarubas is there, so what have I done wrong? If, on the other hand, I take some of the milk with the cream, I've got the tarubas of milk and cream. So I've got less milk, but the tarubas remains. I haven't separated one, but they're still together. So there's no issue of tarubas. Masha ain't taking out olives. As soon as I've poured out some of the brine, I have now separated the liquid which I don't want from the olives which I do want, and that certainly appears to be a issa of boirav soiles min ha'oichu, which is forbidden. In Eretz Yisrael, they are great eaters of leaven. Leaven is a tub of yogurt or sour cream, call it what you like. And when you open it, you find some water on the top. Now, you have two options. Either pour away the water and start eating the leaven, or take your spoon, give it a good mish, a good stir, and then the water has disappeared into the rest of the leaven. Now, what do you do on a Shabbos morning? You open your tub and you find this layer of water. Now, everybody knows that in Hilchos Boirer, you are only allowed to separate the two if there are three conditions. Number one, you separate the oichel from the psoilus. Number two, you don't use an instrument, a keli, you do it by hand. A spoon is an extension of your hand. And number three, it's for immediate use. Now, if you have all these three, then you're okay. Now, here comes the problem. If I have a tub of leaven and I pour out the water, what have I done? Have I taken the psoilus from the oichel or the oichel from the psoilus? Well, you can look at it either way. What is the halacha? What is it? So the Shlomo Zalman, Olavah Shalom, quotes the Eglei Tau. The Eglei Tau says that what remains in your hand is considered oichel, and what has left your hand is considered psoilus. And the Shlomo Zalman takes this as halacha, and therefore he says, there's no harm in pouring away the water from the top of the leaven, because you're holding the tub of leaven. And that's what you're holding when the water's gone. So that is called, and that's the oichel. So you've been boiling the oichel from the psoilus for immediate use, you haven't used the keli, and therefore it is mutar. Now the Eglei Tau doesn't need my help or support, but I'm convinced that there is a very good proof to the Eglei Tau from a Gemara in Shabbos, quoted in Shulchan Aruch. We're now going to switch from pickled olives to pickled cucumbers. I take my pickled cucumber out of the jar. It's been in this brine for weeks or months. It's got too much water in it. So what do? I squeeze this cucumber and out comes the excess water. Is that allowed on Shabbos or not? Says the Gemara, yeah, it's a machlokes. But the halacha lemaisa, as long as you don't use the water, as long as the water is discarded, then you can do that. Now, the Chazonish asks, hold on a minute, isn't this the malacha of dosh, the isha of threshing? Because when you thresh, you put pressure, they used to use animals, were saps and shores, but isha, but it doesn't matter. Pressure, whatever pressure you use is pressure, to separate one from the other. Why may you not milk a cow on Shabbos? Because you're exerting pressure on the teats, and out comes the milk. That is mepharik, or it's a told of dosh. So why is it permitted to squeeze the water out of the cucumber? So he says, there's no comparison, because with disha, what pops out is the oichel. That's what you want. If I thresh my corn, what do I want? I want the corn, which comes out of the husk. If I milk a cow, what do I want? I want the milk. So that's mefarik or dosh. But when I squeeze the water out of the cucumber, do I want the water? It subsides. So it's not malachus dosh. Fine, I say. 100% right. Chas v'sholom, the Chazanish needs me to help him. But I've got a kasha. What about boiler? I'm asking you a voice of kasha. Why is it that if I squeeze the excess water out of the cucumber, why have I not been over the issa of boiler psoilus min hoichel? That's exactly what it is. The water is the psoilus, the cucumber is the oichel. Ah, so the answer must be like the egg lay towel. That's what you hold. That is the main thing. That's what you want. That's called oichel. So now, where are we up to with our olives? According to the egg lay towel, I don't seem to have any problems. Because what is left when I tilt the container and the water goes out, I'm left holding the container with the olives. So that is the oichel. So therefore, it's considered being boiler. Oichel mitoichab soilus. I'm not using any keli for that. Just has to be in a keli. I'm not using a keli. I'm not using a sieve or a colander. So oichel mitoichab soilus is mutter. But no, that's not a keli. It's not a keli used for boiler. It is a keli, admittedly, but it's not a keli used for boiler. So that's perfectly all right. But I told you, Rabbi Yisai, that my dedicated committee do all this before davening. We just said, when is boiler oichel mitoichab soilus without a keli motor? Just before the meal. And we don't have our davening. So it's not just before the meal, it's at least 2 hours. That's not kosher. So therefore, if I accept, and I do, the psak of the egg lay towel and of Shlomo Zalman, it will be mutter only just before the Kiddush Bigaz, around about Oleinu time, just before the Sukkah. However, there are acharonim who say that it will be mutter even before Adon Olam, the first Adon Olam. And the reason is this. If you imagine a jar of pickled olives, you can see exactly what is what. There is really no taruvas. There's water in the jar and there are olives in the jar. But there's no taruvas. They're not mixed up. If you can see clearly what is what. Now the Orach HaShulchan says quite clearly, and the Tzitz Eliezer quotes him and says that this is definitely so, that taruvas, a mixture of bad and good, is only with small things, but not with big things. Where everything is completely separate. Now, I know there are some very frum people, I believe Rav Knopfler is one of them, who says that if you have svarim next to each other in a bookshelf, then you have to remove one to get the other. That is chas v'shoch. Soilus mitoich oichel. So therefore, you have to learn something from the first sefer, because otherwise, if you're not going to learn from it, it's like soilus mitoich oichel. Says the Orach HaShulchan or the Tzitz Eliezer, not so. Things which are clean, this is a Gemara Bava Metzia, this is Bava Kama, this is Yevamos, but they're not mixed up in any way. I can see clearly what's what. Now you see, if you've got the bottom of a barrel, and there are the dregs at the bottom, and you've got water, fire. Now you can't see. It's impossible to see what's what. Unless you tilt it gently, or put it through a filter, you don't know what's dregs, what is the smorim, and what is the wine. Now, if you ain't in a bottle of pickled olives or cucumbers, you can see this is water and this is olives, and never the twain shall meet. And therefore, These acharonim, if you want their names, I will tell you. One is called Oitzus Shabbos, and what was the other one called? The other one's called Mishmeres Shabbos. Both these svarim, they say that there is no problem whatsoever with pickled olives, because the water and the olives are totally separate. They happen to be living in the same jar, but they are not misadded, they're not mixed together, and because of that, there's no problem of boiler at all. The Shmira Shabbos Kilchotza disagrees with them. However, I'm reluctant to use the Psaka Acher Rabim Lahatoif and say, because the Shmira Shabbos is an individual and two other Sforim of probably equal stature disagree with Obosar Rabim. I'm not too keen on that. But one thing is certain, that just before the end of davening, there is absolutely no issue whatsoever in separating the brine from the olives.
What do you do, Mishul?
That's what we're going to do. it's taken me a little time to work all through all these problems.
Oil from tuna fish.
Yes.
You've got a tin of tuna. Yeah, you want to throw away the oil. Is the oil?
Yeah, according to the Shlomo Zalman, the oil is the. You keep the tuna in your hand, so it's perfectly all right.
Oil is also drinkable. I mean,
that makes it better.
That makes it better.
Yeah. So, but if you don't like the oil, you pour it down the drain. That's all right. Yes.
Okay. Now, so the way it's mutter is because the roof says that what you throw away is actually edible.
And that's loy mala the loy moivid. What we're saying is that what you retain in your hand, that is considered the oichel. So you've been boiler oichel mitoy chapsoilus. Although it looks as though you've poured away the psoilus, but you haven't actually handled the psoilus. That's the point. You see, what you don't want is not malchashus. That's a different story altogether. Making holes for the water to go out on Shabbos.
Until a little bit first, and then after you'll
open the tin. Right, I'm sorry, I'm not prepared at this moment in time to say anything about opening tins on Shabbos.
I'm talking about if I do open a tin.
Right. So, as far as the issue of boiler is concerned, you're all right. But it has to be somach l'suba. Now, if I have a minute or two, I'd like just like to say something on the sidra. The pasuk says, "V'chisaymru manoichal v'ashona hashviyis hein l'nizor l'netes troseim." If you ask questions, how can we keep shmita a whole year without any work? V'tzivisis v'rchosi. Moshe says, "Don't worry." So the Sephon asked the obvious kasha: if the people who ask questions, they don't have the tochen, they are asking questions, get a bracha. What about those who don't? So the Sephon says, there's a world of difference between a broch in Tammuz and a broch in Eichus. If you don't ask questions, you get a broch in Eichus, the quality. You get a normal harvest, you eat half of what you normally eat, and you're fully full up. That's a far greater broch than having a double crop in volume. The Kerem HaTzvi says the following: why did Eliezer run towards Rivka? That is when she drew the first jug of water. Now, when she started drawing water for 10 camels, did that happen again? No, it didn't. Why not? He also notes there's a difference between this week's Sedra, the Tzivisius Virchosi, and the Brochus in Sedra Tisovoi. Now, what's the difference? So he says like this: for a tzaddik to eat or drink elevates something which is gashmi, which is material. Eliezer was one of these people who went to Olam Haba alive. So therefore, the water was rushing towards Eliezer. The water wanted to be drunk by Eliezer, this great tzaddik. So the water rushed towards him. Camels. No great mala for the water to be drunk by camels. So there, this didn't apply. Similarly, he says, in Sevra Tisovoy, with those brochas, when the yid not in a high madrega, the Bansham doesn't have to be mitzava es brocha. The brocha want to come. Uvol olech, they'll come without me telling them. They will want to come because of the hisigyucha. They run after you. Because when yid not in such a madrega, it is a mala for the gashmias to be eaten by people who are ruchni. But here it says what? The tzivis is the chosi. The bracha doesn't want to come. You've got no bitachon, you're asking questions. So the bracha doesn't want to come. If you don't ask questions, then the bracha will come without you asking for it, without the bunchum telling it to come.